This is a People First Radio podcast.
There's some evidence that school programs based on didactic messages like just say no to drugs don't stop people from using substances. Charlotte Waddell is among a group that's been studying programs that she says have had an impact in reducing problematic substance use among youth. She says there are lessons that are ready to be applied in classrooms across Canada.
I'm Charlotte Waddell. I'm a professor emerita and director of the Children's Health Policy Center at Simon Fraser University, based in Vancouver. And I'm also a child psychiatrist, which has some bearing on, for example, motivations for researching certain topics. The topic of prevention of opioid misuse, for example, that's one I deal with clinically as well as thinking about it and working on it as a researcher.
And that's the one we're hoping to talk about today. Could you tell me more about that idea of what brought you to doing some research and to writing about it publicly recently?
Yes. And I will just mention, I work with a wonderful team of people at our center. I'm not the only clinician. We also have a psychologist on the research team. But our research group, we've long had a mandate or chosen a mandate to provide the best research evidence to government to encourage governments, particularly the provincial government, to undertake effective prevention and treatment programs to really improve the mental health of children and youth. And so we are always scanning the literature and always thinking about what are relevant topics. And of course, the opioid crisis is on everybody's radar, our own as citizens, but we were also thinking about it as researchers. And the question arose, what could be done before the problem starts? And that's really the nature of primary prevention. And so we did what we call a systematic review, looking for well-done studies, particularly randomized controlled trials, which are the most rigorous evaluation method for interventions. And we felt very fortunate to find a handful, including the ones that we feature in our two articles, showcasing programs that are very effective, that are really working and can meet that goal of intervening when kids are only in middle school, before any substance misuse has started. And the studies that we found had very, powerful long-term positive results.
So we're talking about programs to prevent substance use. If people hear that topic, they might think about any kind of education they had around this when they were in school. You've used the phrase effective programs a couple of times. I would imagine that not all of these programs are created equal. So what makes a good substance use education prevention program?
Joe, I like your question very much, because people of a certain generation will indeed have had a number of interventions in their school years, things like Scared Straight and the Just Say No campaigns, and even there's a program called DARE. What happened with those programs? They were implemented widely, particularly in the US, but also in Canada. But nobody did those randomized controlled trials. In other words, nobody did a rigorous evaluation to see how well do these work, or do these even work. And when they finally did do, for example, randomized controlled trials of the DARE program, they found no benefits for kids. So big lessons from those, if you will, the olden days of the 1980s, to basically say, evaluate before you do a big rollout, because you need to make sure what you're going to invest in as communities, as a province, for example, as a country, that the programs actually benefit children and youth. So what we found were programs that did meet those tests. They had done the studies before they had a big rollout, and they had shown strong benefits for children. So, for example, the leading program that we found took the trouble to do three randomized controlled trials, all showing benefits, looking at reductions or prevention of opioid use. The programs were delivered to kids in grade 6 and 7. Teachers and facilitators delivered these to all the kids in the classroom. Parents were engaged as well. There were parenting sessions. And basically what they found, they had very large sample sizes, thousands of kids, so really good studies that way too. And they did long-term follow-up. One of the studies tracked kids for 14 years, so well into adulthood, showing 65% reductions in misuse of opioids, which is two-thirds. I mean, that's an enormous impact. So that's an example of a program, Strengthening Families, that's ready for implementation. If you've got three positive studies, you've got strong results benefiting kids, something that's relatively straightforward to implement, you know, a couple of days training for teachers and facilitators only, not too onerous. It's something that we could be rolling out now.
So you have looked at programs from across the world that randomized clinical trials suggest have made a positive impact in achieving their goals. What are we doing here in BC on this?
Well, right now we're taking one step. There's a program called Preventure. It didn't turn up in the article that you're citing from the conversation, just because they haven't yet finished studying can it reduce opioid use. But Preventure is a made in Canada program developed by researchers in Montreal, and it has been shown in a randomized controlled trial to reduce alcohol onset of use. So that alcohol is much more commonly misused than opioids, but both are very, very important problems, obviously. The Preventure team is now doing an evaluation across the country, looking at whether that program can also reduce opioids. But Preventure is running in some BC schools. There were people, early adopters, that picked it up and are running it. And it's similar, slightly older children, age 13 to 16, just a couple of group sessions, so it's actually very easy to deliver. So that one's running in BC schools, and the researchers for that program are testing, the benefits potentially for opioids. But to my knowledge, we're not yet implementing, for example, that Strengthening Families really powerful program, and we could be.
A common theme that's emerged from a lot of conversations I've had on this program is that substance use and addiction can be a response to trauma or to conditions like homelessness or chronic pain. How can prevention programs in school take those sorts of things into account and meaningfully address them?
Yeah, really, I think, that the ideas about social determinants of health and how avoidable childhood adverse experiences can influence mental health in general. Those are really important ideas to bring into the conversation. And I think looking at this Strengthening Families program in particular, because it does involve families, we think that it can do a couple of things. One is it's very positive compared to those old programs from the 80s. For example, it builds up kids' skills, their social skills, their ways to push back against peer pressure, builds up their knowledge of how to really have a healthier time and focus on things that are more positive. It's offered to all kids in the classroom. And so what that does is no child is singled out and pulled out to their special group, or no group of kids is singled out by saying, hey, you're more needy than the others. It's a universal program. There's no stigma. So that is empowering for all the kids. The families are involved too. And what that would mean is that a facilitator or teacher who is skilled, and any skilled teacher does this anyway, I think, you give a little extra attention to kids who are facing greater adversities. Same with the families. You give a little extra attention and just enhance the intensity a little bit according to the needs. That, I think, clinicians do that, teachers do that. You could do that within this program too. But by really taking, building skills for kids and having all kids come together in a universal program, it helps equalize things and does help to address some of those factors. That said, I think your question's really important, Joe. There are things, early childhood adverse experiences, such as family, socioeconomic disadvantage, when parents are struggling with mental health problems, we also need to be addressing those precursors of mental health problems, including substance use. So, absolutely, we need to address those things. And kids are affected by the opioid crisis in multiple ways. If their parents, for example, are affected, some kids are even losing their parents or caregivers. So there's more we need to do. I'm not saying school programs are the only thing. We need to wrap around those programs with things that really create equity for all kids.
This is People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh, and my guest is Charlotte Waddell. She's director of the Children's Health Policy Center at Simon Fraser University. We're talking about education programs for youth around substance use. The toxic drug crisis, as we might use that term, especially referring to increases over decades ago in the number of people dying from toxic drug poisoning. By the Government of Canada's own account, it's being caused by changes on the supply side of the illegal drug supply. How do prevention programs need to take that into account? How do they need to evolve based on that reality?
They absolutely. I mean, any program needs to evolve. And what our team recommends is roll out Strengthening Families, but tune it to the BC context and evaluate as you go to see how it works for BC kids, because the studies I mentioned were all done in the US and they were started a number of years ago. So your question is really salient to, you know, what's been a rapidly evolving toxic drug scenario. And so, you know, for example, if I was delivering that program in a BC school, I would, before we delivered it, I would suggest updating the content, really letting kids know about, you know, we're into multiple new generations of drugs that are so toxic, you know, even one try can be fatal or can be extremely harmful for a child or youth. And lots of kids are very aware of this too, but bring that information into the program and then track your outcomes.
How does a program walk the line between, off the top, you were talking about some other programs from the past, things like Just Say No or DARE. How does a program walk the line between those and being successful?
You know, I think the line, kids are aware, most people are aware of the toxic drug crisis. Most people, including children, are aware of what we're seeing, the people who are so ill on our streets, in our towns, in our cities. So kids know about the really bad parts already. And as I mentioned, if many families have been affected and kids may have been directly affected by overdose or other, you know, toxic exposures. So I think that information is already out there. So you want to share the information or just reaffirm what many young people already know. But then you want to give most of your attention to what are positive skill building, child building, resilience building lessons that you can offer and skills that you can have kids practice. And so, you know, if their social skills are stronger because they've taken the program and they've practiced and they've been given great feedback, they're able to think through a little better. For example, if something comes up where there's maybe an offer or an invitation to engage in substance use that wouldn't be healthy or safe. And so they'll be better able to withstand that. But it's based on building resilience versus scaring kids.
Could you dive more into that idea of resilience and what that can look like in practice?
Yeah, it's resilience is a terrific basic concept. It's basically the idea that despite adversity, kids can still thrive if they have the right supports and the right things around them in the community. In other words, if their basic needs are met. So everybody experiences adversity, all of us, and most children do too. It's not that you can prevent all of the adversities, but there are some adversities that are avoidable and should be avoided. Things like, back to what you were mentioning regarding extremes of socioeconomic inequities. Why are some kids' families struggling when others are not? And how do we build better equity across the society in terms of access to social and economic resources? If kids are not receiving the attention they need and their basic needs are not being met, you know, in the home or in the community. That's also something we can address. So resilience is the capacity to do well despite adversities, but we still want to minimize the avoidable adversities so that every child really has a chance to flourish.
How do you build up that resilience?
Well, I think back to the one program we're discussing, the strengthening families, you build it up, you include the families, first of all, because kids are always, by definition, operating within families and within communities. And so, you know, you need to have strong parents and strong families or caregivers to surround the child and meet their needs well. And you have to meet parents' needs too, of course. So that's an important step. Take care of the caregivers. But then building up children themselves. So the kinds of basic social skills that that the Strengthening Families program teaches, you know, just takes a child that may be doing okay, but helps them start to be doing much better because they're empowered to be more confident socially, to be more adroit at navigating, say, conflict in a community situation or in a school situation. And that in turn just builds their resilience. So they're more able to say, hey, I have positive goals for myself. I'm into my sports, my art, my music. I have a life plan here. I have positive things I want to be doing. And that's one of the definitions of resilience.
What kind of resources are we devoting to prevention as opposed to, say, response when it comes to substance use issues?
Well, the best information Canadians have comes from the Canadian Institute for Health Information. And every year they publish a detailed report on health spending in Canada. And every year for the past quite a few years, because our group tracks this, about 6% of overall health spending goes towards prevention. That means about 94% goes to treatment. So, you know, we're really spending a tiny, tiny amount compared to really the vast majority of where that funding goes. So that's a concern, and we could increase that 6%, frankly. It might take a while, but what you would also see down the road, if you think about that 14-year follow-up, 65% reductions in opioid misuse, you know, you'd have to follow it for a while, but you'd start to see cost savings down the road. There's the cost of running a program. The savings aren't immediate, but you'd start to see less people needing the kinds of tertiary services, for example, that people who have opioid misuse diagnoses that they need and require the social services that are needed for adults where we haven't intervened early.
Is there anything else you think it's important to bring to this conversation today?
Just really that every province can be doing this. The provinces are essential, I think, to provide, and territories, I should say, are essential to provide encouragement and resources, including funding, to then encourage school boards, because we have our school system. These are school-based programs. Our school systems are run provincially, but they're also run locally by school boards. And so provincial leadership would be fantastic to encourage the school boards, and then to have individual school boards take the lead. But we do have examples where provincial leadership has facilitated the rollout of a prevention program. There was one for preventing anxiety a few years back. School boards signed on enthusiastically for that because there was some provincial support. So the leadership is needed, but I think school boards and local communities would respond. I think everybody wants to do something about this problem. And if they know there's something positive that we can do, I think you would get great sign on.
Charlotte Waddell, thank you so much for taking the time to discuss it with me.
Thank you for the invitation, Joe.
Charlotte Waddell is a professor emerita and director of the Children's Health Policy Center at Simon Fraser University.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.